Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. I want to welcome all of our listeners in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Jackie Laura Jones with you again for True Forgiveness Teachings on the Blog Talk Radio platform, which my announcement today is this will be the final episode of True Forgiveness Teachings on this platform. So we started this, gosh, Mark and I, 4 years and 3 months ago, March 2nd, 2017, my friends, is when I started True Forgiveness Teachings. And so while I'll be continuing with my teachings, we are letting go of this platform. And so any of you that are not on my email list, if you go to jackie.news, right, it's just www.jackie.news, sign up for my email list. You can stay up to date with everything that's going on. And with that said, who else would I want my last episode on this platform to be with than our very good friend, who I just adore, Bruce Rawls, who makes himself available all the time to do these shows, and we have such fun. So welcome back, Bruce.
Thanks, Jackie. It's always a pleasure and a joy to converse with you and be on your show.
Yay. And you had a great idea, you guys. It was Bruce's thought to talk about the transition, chapter 26, along with chapter 16, which will be talking about, you know, the forgiveness of illusions. And I thought that was really a great timing-wise, that was great, Bruce, because, you know, the transition that the Course is talking about, you know, transitioning from the ego thought system to the Holy Spirit thought system, you know, that can be reflected here in us, you know, making changes and what we would call a transition, you know, that takes different forms here, letting go of some things, embracing new things, you know. So thanks for the topic choice. Great.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, I was reflecting on that this morning a little bit. I was thinking about, you know, transitions and things that come and go, and how really the heart, you know, the silent, unyielding, unchanging heart of the Course is its non-dual metaphysics, which really is that what we all really are in truth is beyond change, is beyond transitions, is beyond anything that has to do with space or time or differences or
yes,
you know anything that changes. It's completely unchanging, and that's the beauty and the profundity of our real identity. And the whole purpose of the Course is to get us to the threshold of that awareness, which is, you know, a peace that's really unfathomable. We can't even imagine what a piece like that would be like within the context of, you know, the who we think we are, because our minds are always so busy. I was listening to one of Ken Wapnick's audios this last 24 hours, and he was talking about how, you know, and I can certainly raise my hand solidly in the air and in agreement. It's like, you know, if you just notice how many moments during a day the mind is quiet. And it, you know, we're so busy doing, busy doing rather than just quiet being.
Yes, just reflecting or just being. Yeah.
Yeah. And not that we shouldn't do all the things that we, you know, feel called to do, but during that process, we can also pause now and then to, you know, stop and wait and judge not, which is the Course's version of forgiveness, is just looking and without, you know, going into the condemnation game of the ego's, you know, maladaptive solution to the non-existent problem, as the Course, as Ken likes to describe the Course's approach to things.
That's right. Oh, I love it. And always loving Ken and his teachings. I was reading some of his stuff the other night as well. And it's interesting that you mentioned the pause, because, you know, I'll share with our listeners, one of the things that's really helped me quiet the busyness of the mind is I was advised a long time ago to take 15 or 20 minute breaks during the day. And people can, it can be 10 minutes or something, but 15 or 20 minutes. And when I go in and I'll just either lie down on the bed or lie in the couch in the living room, and just that sense of just, oh my gosh, for 20 minutes, taking myself out of the busyness of the day, which you point out, Bruce, you know, we're busy, we're doing things. It's not that we're not doing those things. But when I would lay down and just take a break, I would remember, oh my gosh, I can continue this day in peace. Mm-hmm. I can bring the quiet center with me and all the busy doings of Jackie during the day, and then there's clients or shows or recordings or taking care of household this or that or whatever it is, you know. Mm-hmm, and if I reset myself, right, changing the internal teacher. Boy, we mention that a lot on this show. Changing your internal teacher, because your experience, your inner experience, will be completely different. Sometimes the outer as well, but definitely the inner experience is different. So I don't know. I encourage everyone, if they have time, and I know a lot of people do their own meditations and have their own process. It really is something to just take a pause and get quiet, right? Recenter, mm-hmm. just quiet mm-hmm. that mind. Believe me, guys, you're still going to get up and do the things that you need to do during the day. Indeed, they've been scripted out for you, but your inner experience of what you're doing can change. And the thing that is so beautiful about the course is that as we continue to choose, you know, we transition from having the ego as our teacher to the Holy Spirit as our teacher. We actually are waking up from this dream. We're not furthering illusion, which means we're not furthering our self-punishment, suffering, pain, right? And sometimes we don't think of those things, and we don't have to, but that's what's really happening when you're choosing to lay the ego aside and say, you know what, I like to listen to a different voice for the rest of the day. And we don't realize the power that's in that choice, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It sometimes thinking about, well, first I wanted to comment on your suggestion of, you know, taking some time throughout the day to just, you know, give yourself breaks. And oftentimes what I'll do is, you know, sometimes in siesta mode and sometimes not, but just, you know, taking, like you say, 10 to 20 minutes or sometimes a little more to just, you know, close your eyes and think about something that you find helpful or inspiring. And oftentimes I'll you know, reread the workbook lessons for the day or do something that, you know, connects me with that level of source in the mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I find that really helpful. And then, you know, then it's like I've got a fresh perspective to
right.
go back to whatever I was working on. And a lot of times,
exactly.
You know, I'll get answers to, oh, well, what I, you know, some technical thing that might pop into my head when
yes.
when I stop, you know, just give myself enough of a pause and I say, oh, well, then, you know, it'll just pop into my head. Well, I could try this, you know, but it's
exactly.
not because I'm trying to solve it. It's just, it's almost like there's a grace that happens that when you kind of get your own stuff out of the way, you know, it enables you to you know, be able to see things and from a larger, you know, perspective, right?
Absolutely. Well said. And there is, I love it that you used the phrase, there's a grace that happens, and you can pause and connect to that, the level of source, God, you know, the highest level of source. There is a grace that happens. You know, Mark, my husband, who you know, Bruce, and some of the listeners know, it's so interesting how he'll say, wow, he's a Virgo. So he's always thinking, he's analyzing, he's, you know, he's very, you know, uses the left brain a lot in what he does. He's a pilot. He does things where, you know, you're figuring things out. And boy, he often will comment when he just lets go, right? And he'll just take a load off when he can't solve a problem or he's been too much, you know, in his head. Something will just drop in, just like you said, Bruce, if you're at your debt, you know, some technical thing or everything. And you guys, this is really powerful. It can save you loads of time, you know, taking those pauses and breaks. And a lot of, you know, quantum physicists and people over the years are so familiar with that space of just kind of letting something drop in. There's many names for it, but, you know, I say sometimes I'll just get a ping, you know, and I'll go, oh, that didn't even occur to me. And it's just the best idea saves me loads of time. Or I'm like, it can happen like, oh, I should call this person or that person. Not that I do it right away, but I write it down and say, that's right. When the time's coming in the script, this is the person I'm going to contact. Great. Thank you for that. Okay, next thing. You know, mm-hmm. It's almost like it's great, you know.
Another thought that comes to mind is in terms of transitions is it seems like, you know, the swapping out of the two thought systems is typically a gradual process. It's sort of like a slow dawning or a gradual awakening. And I was thinking about electronics and, you know, audio engineering, things like that. There's things called crossfades, and a crossfade would be equivalent to when the audio signal from one channel fades out and then another one fades in, and over time that becomes one becomes less and less and less, and the other slowly increases. And I think that's kind of what's happening typically. It's certainly not a linear process, and it'd be silly to expect that to be like that. But over time, if you kind of look at our investment in the two different identities that the Course talks about, one can see that transition is really a very slow, gradual, graceful, gentle one, where we get to see the insanity of doing everything on our own, by ourselves, just, you know, for what's in it for me kind of thing. And see that when we're thinking along those lines, we're not at peace. And then when we, you know, ask our inner kindness teacher for help and identify with that real identity, then
right.
Think the you know, the quality of our awareness and the peacefulness is reinforcing, and it's a positive feedback kind of a thing, where you apply that more frequently and you're more peaceful, and then the quicker you do it, the more you want to do that. And so it's sort of a, you know, fade in, fade out kind of a thing, because if we did it all at once, we'd just be freaked out. I mean, and the Course says, you know, that we're not asked to do this all at once. And so, you know, fear not that you'll be hurled abruptly into reality.
I love that line. Yeah.
We're not going to go poof, you know.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. I'm so glad you brought that up, because I wanted to read the beautiful words of the Course from that, what you just said, chapter 16, from the forgiveness of illusions. And I put this in our show description. In the transition, there is a period of confusion in which a sense of actual disorientation may occur. But fear it not, for it means only that you have been willing to let go your hold on the distorted frame of reference that seemed to hold your world together. This frame of reference is built around the special relationship. Without this illusion, there could be no meaning you would still seek here. Fear not that you will be abruptly lifted up and hurled into reality. Time is kind, and if you use it on behalf of reality, it will keep gentle pace with you in your transition. And I wanted to offer a comment on this too, because you know, clients of mine will say, oh, Jackie, I just can't look at the Course right now. I just can't do it. I can't, you know, apply it or something like that. And often when we are practicing any spiritual thought system, certainly the Course, which is what we discuss on this platform, but as we're becoming, loosening the investment in the identification with the small s self, the physical body, it can become daunting. And Jesus makes reference to this in the Course, that to even in some of the workbook lessons, well, it's a good idea to stop, right? I'm paraphrasing, you know, if you feel too much discomfort or mm-hmm, the fear mm-hmm. is too great. So I was sharing with my clients, Bruce, you know, a lot of times that, you know, we're all in this together. Sometimes you just, you know, throw up your hands, especially in the early days, you know, that can happen, and or the later days. And, you know, remember reading words in a book, although helpful for sure, is different than actually practicing the forgiveness,
right,
doing the exercise, practicing non-judgment when situations come up. So I share with my clients, you know, you have the tools necessary to practice forgiveness, even if you're not, you don't have to look at a textbook or a workbook every day. And another thing I'd like to offer everyone for hope, remember your learning is cumulative, right? Like, let's say you're in second grade or third grade, whenever you're using learning addition, subtraction, your timetable, your multiplication tables, right? So you learn it, you retain it, and then you kind of call upon that when you need it. We add and subtract things on a restaurant bill for tips, and right? So you learn things, right? And then this is what we do. Sometimes you'll always carry your learning with you. And so, you know, don't be discouraged if you know, this fear comes up, because it engenders great fear when you're practicing a thought system like this. Jesus wants us to look at that fear with him, because we can move through it and recognize there's nothing really to fear. It's the ego's trick. But remember that you'll learn things, and the mind remembers, even if you're not studying every day or you feel you have to take a break. It certainly shouldn't be something that you feel forced to do. So remember, we learn things in second and third grade, that we retain that learning. We take it with us. We call upon it when we need it. And so, you know, we can use our forgiveness tools that we've learned anytime. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes lessons pop into my mind, or, you know, certain things are just ingrained now, switching to, you know, the Holy Spirit as my teacher. So anyway, just a small commentary on that.
Yeah, that's really helpful, because, you know, it is a developmental, curriculum. And kind of to tie into what you were saying a few moments ago, you know, the course even says, you know, do not fight yourself. And if your resistance is too strong, you know, then, you know, the lessons will be there to waiting for you when you're ready to address them.
Exactly.
That's the beauty of it all. It's like, it's not going away. You know, what we need to look at is keeps confronting us until we have gone through the process of healing our minds. And it's always about that, isn't it? And that healing process is invariably one of forgiving ourselves for what never happened. And when we're not ready to forgive, and when we're still too attached to the grievances and the upsets and making big deals out of stuff, it's like, just say, oh, okay, well, I must have been afraid of the loving kindness and the peace that's behind that. And it'll be there waiting for me. So no need to force things. And the fighting, you know, everyone's fighting a hard battle. Well, you know, at some point we'll not want to fight anymore. The other thing that I was reminded of that with what you were saying is that this is something that Ken Wapnick mentioned that I thought was really, really astute. And he's quoting someone else, who I don't recall at the moment, but it is something to the effect of, the longest journey is from the head to the heart. And so in a sense, there's really kind of two transitions. There's the transition of ramping up our intellectual understanding of the metaphysics of the Course. How it's never about the other person. It's always, you know, a choice in my mind for you know, which one of two thought systems, and I'm not upset for the reason I think. I could see peace instead of this. Those two steps of forgiveness. So we get the theory down, but then the practice is, you know, the heart part, which is H-E-A-R-T, which sometimes is typically the H-A-R-D. You know, the lab assignments are a little bit more difficult than the theory sometimes. You know, you might ace the theory exam, but then the lab assignment's like, oh, well, yeah, I got upset with, you know, significant other or an employer or a person on the highway that cut me off, or, you know, it could be any number of things, but anytime that we find ourselves getting upset, it's like, okay, well, I have a choice of teachers at every moment, don't I? And that's totally. Okay if I'm not ready to forgive in one particular classroom in my mind, and it'll come around again, so not to worry, right?
Oh, absolutely. Great points. I'm so glad you said that and mentioned that about Ken, because I wanted to read Ken's commentary on that first sentence of the quote I read in chapter 16, section 6, paragraph 7. It goes along with what you're saying. Like, the theory is hard, like you were, I'm sorry, the theory is easier, like you said, sometimes we can understand it, but
right.
then it's hard to practice, right? But here is a great example that Ken gives about understanding why, really going back to the metaphysics, the theory of understanding why we're doing what we do. It's not something that we think of every day, but it's helpful to hold this in the backdrop of our minds simultaneously while we are doing the things that we need to do, right, on the level of form to keep us in relative peace. So I'll read this quote again. I'll read Ken's commentary for everyone. In the transition, there is a period of confusion in which a sense of actual disorientation may occur. So Ken says, this important thought is also echoed in the following chapter. Jesus is telling his students that forgiveness is a process that entails great fear, and implicit in his teachings are these words, quote, you made the world of bodies and special relationships because you were terrified of your mind's guilt. This guilt was made as well, because you were even more terrified of the mind's love that you might one day choose, which ultimately would cause your individual self, small s, to disappear. How then could you not be afraid of the choice for mindfulness over mindlessness? Indeed, your bodily identification is founded on fear, and you will not let it go simply because I ask you to. End of quote. Jesus lets us know that he knows we will be resistant to crossing the bridge because our existence is built on the body being rooted in terra firma. Nonetheless, it will gradually dawn on us that we are standing on nothing, and what we think is standing on nothing is also nothing. So one could go on and on, but to your point, Bruce, you were just mentioning before I read that about how maybe we say to ourselves, I guess I'm afraid of the love in my mind today, right? I guess I'm afraid to choose that. And this speaks directly to that as we walk this back to the metaphysics of why we do what we do, you know? So there really is no reason to be afraid, but when we are, we know that forgiveness is a process and Jesus will meet us where we are. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that meeting where we are is you know, throughout the course, and that so much of it is written on a level where, you know, we think we're these separate selves, and it's mighty convincing. So,
of course
so
it is. Look at this whole time space dream. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's incredibly you know, a convincing hallucination, right? But beyond that, there is something that calls to everyone that eventually we all say, you know, there must, with or without those words, but you know, there must be a better way, and you know, so it's a happy inevitability that we will you know, all of us in some manner or another go beyond the dream and find the reality that we all share. So that's actually, you know, an inspiring thought. But the practical application of that in any given moment is that I could, in this moment, see that I'm not upset because of anything anyone else has done, but I am responsible for everything that I interpret. And then the other next step of that process, of course, is I could see peace instead of the misinterpretation that I've chosen. So,
right.
I was struck with the, I particularly like the paragraph you, or parts of the two paragraphs you pulled out. I was actually also noticing how the sentences before and after what you pulled out kind of fit as well. Okay if I read those?
Absolutely.
Sure. Okay. So paragraph 7 begins with, the bridge itself is nothing more than a transition in the perspective of reality. And the bridge, of course, being, I suppose, you know, one way of looking at it would be the Holy Spirit being the bridge or the practice of forgiveness. But, you know, really that whole thought system is really that bridge that gets us back to the reality. And then he continues, on this side, everything you see is grossly distorted and completely out of perspective. What is little and insignificant is magnified, and what is strong and powerful cut down to littleness. Mm-hmm. And there's where it, you know, begins with, in the transition, there's a period of confusion in which a sense of actual disorientation may occur. You know, if we're looking through the binoculars backwards, you know, it's like, you know, everything that's big is going to seem tiny, you know, and vice versa, you know. So because the little s self that we think we are is given incredible importance in the ego's dream, we think it's all about number one. And just watching one's mind and seeing how horrifically, you know, abysmally shocking that is to notice on a typical day how much of one's thinking is about, well, what's in it for me kind of thing, to the exclusion of everyone else. The inclusive identity isn't even in the ego's vocabulary. So
right.
It's you know, we don't even have a clue of what the ocean is, but boy, we sure know our droplet, you know, when we think that's everything.
Right.
You know?
That's a great
And we build massive walls around our little droplet, in our mind only, of course. We've never left the ocean and we never built the wall. And what you were sharing earlier, what Ken was quoting, it kind of ties into another thing that he shared that I really like. It's the metaphor of, you know, the emperor's no clothes. He says, well, not only is the emperor naked, but there's no emperor, and meaning that the whole foundation upon which that thought system rests is that
right.
a simple misunderstanding. It's more spouting of favorite Kenisms, but the way he says, you know, there's nothing sinful, evil, or wicked about the ego. It's just silly. It's just a, you know,
right.
an ineffective
right.
approach to identifying with our misinterpretations about things, instead of seeing a peaceful option that's always available. So,
right, right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well said. Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, and then the sentences after that in paragraph 8 are also pretty cool too. So I'll read the previous sentences. Fear not that you will be abruptly lifted up and hurled into reality. Time is kind, and if you use it on behalf of reality, it will keep gentle pace with you in your transition. Okay, and that's, let's see. Yeah, okay. And then he continues, the urgency is only in dislodging your mind from its fixed position here. So in a sense, it's not urgent. It's like, oh, you got to do this right now. You know, like we were talking about earlier, it'll keep coming back around for us to do our forgiveness lessons until we see that the only person we're beating up on is ourselves by
right.
holding grievances. So,
right.
But the urgency is, you know, why suffer needlessly when we can choose a different option? So, and I'll read that again. The urgency is only in dislodging your mind from its fixed position here. This will not leave you homeless and without a frame of reference. The period of disorientation, which precedes the actual transition, is far shorter than the time it took to fix your mind so firmly on illusions.
Boy, that's
delayed.
Right.
Yeah, and I try to remember it also too, that, you know, the early part of the text, it reminds us that, you know, what we've done is an incredible learning feat. I mean, we've taught ourselves to believe in not only the whole thought system of duality and polarization, but the whole idea that it was possible to make up a world of space and time, and things that are annoying and frustrating and irritating and upsetting, and you know, we've given everything like those early workbook lessons suggest, the meaning that they have for us. And not to be upset with ourselves when we find ourselves upset, but just say, oh, well, I could give it a break, give it a rest here and come back to it if I need to. You know, that transition period is however long we need to make it be. It really doesn't matter, does it? So anyway, he continues, this period of disorientation which precedes the actual transition is far shorter than the time it took to fix your mind so firmly in illusions. Delay will hurt you now more than before only because you realize it is delay and that escape from pain is really possible. Find hope and comfort rather than despair in this. You could not long find even the illusion of love in any special relationship here, for you are no longer wholly insane, and you would soon recognize the guilt of self-betrayal for what it is. And that's, I think, a great example of the
powerful
idea that, you know, we can, you know, procrastinate and delay and so forth, but eventually we'll want to voluntarily choose against the insanity of thinking that the world is going to make us happy, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad you read that because I love this whole section again. You know, for the listeners, you know, Bruce and I, we come together for these, you know, kind of relatively short conversations. And you could, one could say so much about it. I always encourage everybody to read these, you know, chapters, these sections. They're so profound, you know, this period of disorientation. And it isn't something to be afraid of, guys, because here's what has helped me over the years too. It does feel like, I remember this clearly in 2002 or 2003, my mother will attest to this, that I really felt like, oh, I feel like something's being taken away, because I started to realize that really on a deeper level that, you know, I wasn't really here. All the meaning that I had given things was different. And there was just this kind of period of, oh my gosh, that's so weird. Wait a minute. But nobody really knows I'm here. Oh my gosh. What does that mean? I remember back at that, Bruce, having those moments. But then I remembered, well, yeah, but God knows where I am really. And that's the good news.
You mean that literally and figuratively, right?
That's right. He knows where I am really. And my family, everybody I was thinking of at the time, like the bodies of your family and everything, everybody's there in perfect oneness. It was like a light switch in my mind from this fear of, I can't go back to feel the fear right now because it's been so long, but I remember it so well. I remember having this kind of this feeling of panic, this in-between. And guess what I noticed afterwards? We're so big on kind of like punishing ourselves, right? Guilt demands punishment. And, you know, we've attacked God. And so we're running away from that, you know, seemingly attacked him. We're running away and we project a whole world, right, to escape into and all this stuff. But I kept thinking to myself as I went along the way, you know what? I'm not losing anything. I'm gaining everything. I started to think, oh my gosh, I don't have to be so concerned with what the ego would be concerned with as bodies. There's a massive amount of distractions that take our attention. And what I figured out that I lost, you guys, if people want to talk about loss or, oh, I don't want to lose anything. Guess what you're going to lose? You're going to start to lose the fear, the guilt, the anxiety, the depression that goes along with the ego's script. That's what you start to lose. And that's good news because life becomes a little gentler, kinder in your mind, how you're perceiving life, not the external, which can be quite chaotic, as everybody knows, but you remember where the external is coming from. You remember there's nothing really out there. It's just your dream. And so what I lost along the way was a lot of just that fear, that panic, that anxiety of, wait, but what does that mean? But we love our parents. We love our children. We love it. Of course. That only just grows. And guess what? you're seeing those images for who and what they really are. You're able to have better interactions, meaning you won't be holding them in your mind to less than what they really are. And your response is always can always be a right-minded response, meaning choosing that content of love in your mind will be reflected out into the things that you, quote, see here. And so it was really a transition, speaking of transitions on this level, moment for me to recognize that, you know? So
That's really helpful and insightful. And you know, realizing that all the things that we really truly love that genuine appreciation can't change, we're not being asked to sacrifice that at all. And
no, not at all.
You know, in fact, it of course reminds us that, you know, it saved all of our loving thoughts and kindnesses and kept them in their purity, kind of thing.
Right.
It's one of those things that we read in a study group that I attend frequently, and I think that's really helpful. That, you know, the things that are genuine, that are our real identity and our real nature, can never be lost. And that kind of is a great transition, pun intended, to something else we could read and talk about briefly, because there's way more here than we have time for. But I thought maybe we could read a little bit of the beginning part of chapter 26, which talks about exactly what you're just talking about, which is chapter 26 is the transition, and the first section is the sacrifice of oneness. Shall I read the first paragraph or so?
Absolutely. I'm turning
I think it addresses exactly what you were talking about.
It does. That's right. Here we go. I've got it right here. The sacrifice, parentheses, of oneness. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Air quotes around sacrifice.
Right.
Yep. And then it begins with, in the, quote, dynamics, unquote, of attack, is sacrifice a key idea? It is the pivot upon which all compromise, all desperate attempts to strike a bargain, and all conflicts achieve a seeming balance. You know, it's ego's art of the deal. It is the symbol of the central theme that somebody must lose. Its focus is on the body is apparent, for it is always an attempt to limit loss. The body itself is a sacrifice, a giving up of power in the name of saving just a little for yourself. To see a brother in another body separate from yours is the expression of a wish to see a little part of him and sacrifice the rest.
Mm.
Look at the world and you will see nothing attached to anything beyond itself. All seeming entities can come a little nearer or go a little farther off, but cannot join. I'm also in that sentence six there, see, you know, separate from yourself. I'm reminded of a video that another fellow course student sent me the other day that was talking about mind and brain.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking, well, how quickly our science fixates on the brain, which, you know, it's kind of certainly a place to start because there's a lot of cognitive stuff going on there. But I was thinking of the analogy of mind and brain is sort of like ocean and droplet again. You know,
I love
to think that we're limited to our brains is to demean our spirit in an unimaginably constraining way. And that's the sacrifice that the ego thought system asks of everyone, and is relentless in its demand for that. And Holy Spirit says, God thinks otherwise.
Right. Yeah. That's well said. And, you know, to where it says, you know, to see a brother in another body separate from yours is the expression of a wish to see a little part of him and sacrifice the rest, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So when the perception of the body is reflects the mind's wish to keep to make the separation real and believe in separation. So another idea that has helped me climb up the ladder, you know, metaphorically to the home we never left, right? Is recognizing that, you know what, we're not, for the listeners, it's not that your eyes, the body's eyes, will not see form. So the Course isn't saying that we're not going to physically see, right, the bodies. The Course is talking about perception. and interpretation, how we interpret what the body's eyes are showing us. So one thing that really helped me along the way is when I would get triggered by a certain behavior, mine too, could have been mine or someone else's, I would always kind of look past the body, remembering what the Course's teachings of, you know what, it's, you're just taking this little part that's not even real, but it was a step just to start thinking of that, to start thinking of it that way. For anybody, you know, often there are people that are just, you know, newer to the Course, and it's a lot to take in sometimes. So sometimes you can start with just saying, you know what, there's just more to that person than what I'm seeing. And guess what? Jesus was able to look beyond that behavior to what's even behind that, which is the fear. People wouldn't be, quote, behaving badly, people in parentheses, you know, wouldn't be behaving badly if there wasn't fear behind that. And it's our shared fear, you guys. It's because the mind is one. And so the mind is projecting the fear out there, and it's showing up in the different body, you know, people being fearful. So sometimes I would just take these steps, like I would think about that. I would be like, yeah, you know what? I'm not seeing the whole picture here by any means, you know, we know now, but not seeing the whole picture. And I'm willing to see this person differently because, Bruce, as you mentioned before, we're taking what's real and making it really small and then taking what's false and making it like really big, you know. And so it's just interesting to, you know, turn that around and say, you know what, my mind was so powerful, it made up this time-space hologram, this illusion. My gosh, don't I think that the Holy Spirit mind would be just as powerful? And in fact, it's more because it's but when you think of these concepts, sometimes it's helpful just to talk yourself out of, like, I don't know, intense fear or panic. Just remember, I just don't see the whole picture here, right?
Yep. Yeah, and the whole picture, of course, being beyond the scope of any individual, because individuality is still, if you pull that word apart, still based on duality. And any division of the whole turns us into droplets again instead of the ocean. And we're all
right.
The ocean in truth, but we've lost sight of that. And we've carefully rehearsed and mastered the role of being a droplet so thoroughly that we don't even question that we're still in character, playing
right,
a role in an incredibly sophisticated movie, play, drama, you know, Toy Story, whatever you want to call it. I was just listening to the latest audio from the Foundation for A Course in Miracles about Toy Stories, and I had a conversation about that with C.A. Brooks, and we're talking about how, you know, we're all, you know, convinced that our toys are of all the things that we think are such big deals, are the things that if we can look at, you know, a gentle amusement, say, oh, well, I don't have to stay stuck in the sandbox of my mind if I ask for a little help now and then to see the,
right,
the bigger picture. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. It's those are so helpful, listening to all that from the Foundation for Course in Miracles and also the Foundation for Inner Peace, which I wanted to mention too, before we wrap up, as we always mention, you know, on this program. And you know, there's so many things, you know, one could mention. And I just appreciate all the work everybody's doing out there, just sharing the message, having discussions. I just joined a wonderful Zoom group again. I was asked to teach at a Zoom group, Course Zoom group, which was so fantastic to do. And I'm going to remember to put those out in a newsletter for people. I'm not the best at marketing, but I've decided that I am going to be better at that. So, but I just want to know everyone to know, you know, how much I appreciate, you know, everyone working out there with whatever they're doing Zoom groups, they're doing classes, just sharing this message for people that are ready for it. And I wanted to mention one other thing too. This is a process, guys, as we've talked about before, and it's not a system of behavior. It's an exercise in the mind, and so a good piece of advice is that you remain normal here and you do normal things. Part of the beginning of this process is that you're just changing your internal teacher, and so you're just denying the ego's interpretation of things in favor of a perspective that is going to help you awaken. In the meantime, you'll become kinder, gentler. You'll be able to forgive more. Things that used to really trigger you won't trigger you as much. That can be unsettling too, because it seems that we're giving certain things up. You know, there are those old, things like, who would I be without my problems, right? Or who would I be without this dynamic between my spouse and I? We keep butting heads. You know, there's a part of us that wants the conflict, and we know why this is when we go back to the metaphysics, right? So everything here in the ego's world is separation and conflict, one or the other, kill or be killed, you know, seek and do not find, right? If you know, all these ego attributes that don't seem to ever really work for us. So as you're going through your transition, guys, wherever you are, just know you're never alone. It's impossible. And you can do all the normal things that you do here. Indeed, the world was over long ago. So everything has been scripted out, but you can switch to the forgiveness script, of the ego script. And that will not only help you awaken, but we always want to be helpful to the people that we love. And you're most helpful when you're taking your brothers and sisters with you as you're thinking about them correctly, not holding them in the prison of the ego thought system, right? And sure, as we climb up the ladder, we realize there's no them. You're not forgiving things and situations that are really there. They're just in your mind. And that understanding just comes.
pardon the interjection there, Jack. Said just, it reminded me of, actually, I'm going to mention a couple of books that have been very, very influential in my life. One is Richard Bach's Illusions.
Oh, I love Richard Bach's Illusions.
There's one part in that wonderful little book where Richard, the protagonist, the first person of the story, is talking with his cohort Don Shimoda, and they're vaporizing clouds and stuff like that, somehow the topic of imagination and. Anyway, he says, yeah, it's just, Richard says, it was just my imagination. And then Don Shimoda fires back, it's just your imagination? Have you forgotten this world is your imagination?
That's
These are
right.
MGM worlds and Warner Brothers lifetimes. You know, that quote stuck in my head. And I love that phrase, because it's like, of course, now it's a little bit dated, probably would be, the folks that did all the Star Wars, you know, Lucasfilms whoever the current special effects, you know, houses around the planet but you know, we have, you know, special effects galore in this world that our mind is so incredible that, you know, we forget that, you know, it's a gigantic holographic projection of unfathomable proportions. So anyway,
right.
I like that, you know, just your imagination. And then, I've just picked up sitting here on my desk. I've been going through box of old books that I'm going to donate to a metaphysical library in Ashland tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
As I'm driving through. And one of them is a duplicate copy. My wife and I both have a copy of this book called The Kabbalion, which I ran across in the early 70s. And I'm really grateful for having found this book, because the very first of the seven hermetic laws that this 100-year-old, now 100, what is it, almost 109 years old book talks about is the first law is mentalism. All is mental. Everything is in the mind. And it's like, well, just this, that one law really explains so much if we really ponder it. And it kind of encompasses what the Course suggests of, you know, ideas leave not their source. You know, it, none of this left our mind.
That's right.
None of anything that we could possibly perceive or conceive has left the source, and which is, you know, sort of bad news for the ego, because
right.
that emperor has, you know, that naked emperor never was born, but
right.
it's good news for what we really are, because we never left the perfect oneness that we think
That's
that we
right.
trashed and you know, blew up, or whatever metaphor you want to throw at it.
right.
So we there's no way we could sacrifice oneness. The next paragraph in that chapter 26 is, the world you see is based on, quote, sacrifice, unquote, of oneness. It is a picture of complete disunity and total lack of joining. Around each entity is built a wall of so seeming solid that it looks as if what is inside it can never reach without, and what is out can never reach and join with what is locked away within the wall. And there's our little droplet universe, isn't it? Each part must sacrifice the other part to keep itself complete. For if they joined, each one would lose its own identity. And by their separation, are their selves, little less selves, maintained. So
yeah.
That's the strategy of insanity, isn't it?
That's the strategy. Keep everyone separate. And we see that reflected out into everything in the world now. Separation and division, yeah. division. I want people to remember that is not your natural thought. That is not mm-hmm. your natural state. So don't be fooled by the ones trying to divide, right? So just remember that we really are all one in truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, oh my gosh. Well, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I just had one more thought that I was kind of reflecting on something I was listening to that I think ties into that. And it says that awareness that we're all not only connected, but ultimately the same and one thing is really the basis for true compassion too. When we can listen to what other people are sharing and realize that, you know, we're all fighting the same hard battle, but really feel the depth of what someone is going through without necessarily identifying with it, and apply that to ourselves too. Is, you know, when we go off on our own little mental rants about this or that, and just say, oh, wow, I must have forgotten my real identity.
Right.
What a great opportunity for practicing compassion for this alleged imposter that I see in the mirror that I've identified with.
Exactly. Well said. So many good points. And I just wanted to end on letting everyone know, let's say you're in the spiritual buffet line and you're finding things that work for you, and you find that some of the principles in A Course in Miracles are, it's not for you, or you don't understand it, or you don't believe it, or something like that. Guess what? That's okay. What the most important thing to do, you guys, you are connected to Source. You have your intuition. You're never alone. We don't know what everybody's curriculum is. In fact, Jesus says in the Course that this is one teaching of many, right, in the universal curriculum. So I think it's important always to point out that there's no specialness. Even we can't get wrapped up in specialness with spiritual thought systems we choose, or we're falling mm-hmm. into the ego's trap as if one is better than the other. You are connected to your source. And you will find the things in the paths that work for you, right? And all paths lead to God in the end, meaning this is already over. Many teachings teach that we have, you know, we're going to wake up to a oneness that, you know, that we've never left. The Course is a path that I've found goes the furthest. It's very unique in its pure non-dualism, but mm-hmm. you know, take what you need, take nuggets from things that work for you, because mm-hmm. you everybody's on their path, right? And we can't, why would we judge anyone else's thing? You're just judging a part of your split mind, the fractured mind. It's just judging yourself. All judgment comes back to you in the end. So we want to honor where everybody is, right? It's really important. So it also helps you honor yourself.
Yes.
Because
yes,
we're all one. So the minute people start thinking there's a specialness in spiritual path, you're right down the ego's alley again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Making one thing real or better than another, right? So it's always a nice little trick of the ego to, you know, even make something special out of this blue book, which I love, you know, with all my heart. I'm under no illusions that it is something for everyone, right? All at once in this, you know, holographic thing we're experiencing here, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, long before that particular tome arrived on the scene in our lives, there were other things that led us to it, including this, you know, couple of books I just mentioned and
yes,
countless other things. And I know, I'm sure in your life and so many others that might be listening, you know, there have been things that have been just, you know,
so helpful.
Little steps that we've all taken to get to
exactly
where we're willing to consider that maybe there's another way of looking at everything.
Oh, absolutely. So honor your paths, everyone. And we just have like a minute left here, but I just wanted to thank you again, Bruce, for these shows have been so fun, so informative.
Oh, likewise.
They're in a lot of countries, you know, because obviously it's on Blog Talk Radio, and I can see that people in a lot of different countries are listening. So this is just the end of this on this format, guys, you know, for now. So to all the listeners, just you can find Bruce at acimblog.com, all his wonderful discussions with people. And if you go to jackie.news and subscribe to my newsletter, you'll be informed about kind of what's coming next. The information about my online classes are up there. And thank you so much again, Bruce, for joining me. And I look forward to joining you on Zoom and different things that, you know, I'll be doing on different platforms. So you and I will always be, you know, joining in some way. It'll be so fun.
Yep. Looking forward to whatever forms those take and whatever transitions those lead us all.
Yeah, and you were speaking of books. I also wanted to give a shout out to one of the books that really solidified my understanding of the Course, which is my brother-in-law Gary Renard's
yes,
book,
indeed,
The Experience of the Universe. So mm-hmm. I'm with my family all the time, and I mention them a lot on this podcast. Sometimes I forget to mention them, but I will mention it on this last episode. My sister Cindy Laura Renard has written two wonderful books, and there's always new people that are listening to this. So, you know, Bruce has written done a couple of things that are on his website too, acimblog.com. So, boy, there's a lot of resources to check out. Always the facim.org and acim.org. as well, the Foundation for Inner Peace and the Foundation for A Course in Miracles.
And your book, Jackie, along with Gary and Cindy's, are some of my favorites. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much,
for
Bruce.
What you've been sharing for quite
thank
some time.
Thank you so much. I am having my audio book out this year, and then I'm working
great
on book two in my series, so I'll keep everyone posted on that. So, well, we love you all so much. And remember that you are love and you are loved. And take care, everyone. Be well and blessings.